While entrepreneurs are often lauded with creating new businesses and ideas, it is more often the case that change agents working within organizations or intrapreneurs are responsible for innovation and seeing those new ideas through to completion. Welcome to the Innovation Economy Intrapreneurs Series. I am your co-host, Adam Chen, an independent change management consultant and current president of AmenityLink, a property technology company. In this series, you will hear stories and insights from leaders within organizations that have had the courage to create new ways to move business forward. To listen to the latest episodes or sign up for the Innovation Economy newsletter, go to innovationeconomy.show or click on your favorite podcast app to make sure you hear the latest episodes. And now, on to the show. Today, my guest is Elliot Pepper, the founder of Northbrook Financial. Elliot, thanks for coming on the show. Why don't we have you start by introducing yourself and telling our listeners a little bit about your journey.
Sure. Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. My background, my journey kind of started pretty in a traditional sense, I guess you could say. I started off as an accounting major, graduated, got my CPA, started my career in corporate tax, working for one of the big four accounting firms, Ernst & Young. So I did that for about 3 to 4 years. I then moved into an in-house tax role at an investment advisory firm called Brown Advisory, located in Baltimore. And I did that for about 3 or 4 years. And then more recently, I founded Northbrook Financial, going on 7 years now. And what we do at Northbrook is really a combination of my experiences and frankly, my academic training kind of combined, where we provide tax, personal financial planning, and wealth management services to clients. We're primarily focused on working with individuals, families, and small business owners, where there are unique complexities across tax planning and investments, and kind of bringing it all under one place to be able to kind of serve clients. So that's kind of where I got started. Definitely the way I think about it, kind of a traditional corporate route into my career, but definitely found my stride and kind of found what works for me more in the entrepreneurial space.
Yeah. That sounds quite a journey. So, you know, you are an entrepreneur today, as you've just mentioned, but having started your career with Ernst & Young and then Brown Advisory, you know, when I say the word intrapreneur, what does that mean to you?
So what it means to me is something very similar to entrepreneurship, just the setting is different. In one setting, you are within an org, in intrapreneurship, you are within an organization, a company, a corporation. Entrepreneurship, you yourself have created that entity or organization. But really at the core of it is very, very similar, at least the way that I look at it. The way I define it is really simply as just creating value where it didn't previously exist. And so in an intrapreneurship setting, that can really range. And it really, you know, it's very flexible when I think about it. It could be creating value in the sense of a process that didn't used to exist, and then you're able to create it and it adds value. So that process could be relevant in sales, in HR, in accounting, in business development, in anything. It could be a new product. It could be, you know, a structural thing that you bring to an organization. A business was set up this way, and then you kind of create a new type of structure that could exist, something that didn't exist before. It adds value. That same theme, I feel like, has to kind of course through the veins of people who have that in them, whether they're doing it within an organization in an entrepreneurship manner, or going off and starting their own business as an entrepreneur.
I love that. I love the concept of creating value. Certainly, I think it just with my own background, I'm a bit biased towards, you know, technological innovation. You know, I'm always fascinated by the cutting edge, but, and maybe some of our listeners kind of gravitate that way as well. But it's so fascinating to hear you think that, because entrepreneurship truly is much broader than that. So you're in finance, clearly. You know, and some of our listeners might think that that's kind of a boring thing. So maybe you could elaborate, maybe share some stories about ways that in your past roles, you've been able to drive, you know, value at some of these other organizations you're a part of.
Sure, sure. So I think really what did it for me, and it's really when I reflect back on the trajectory of my career and where I am now, might sound a little cliche to say this, but it is true. And so then it's my true cliche, but I am where I am now because of the experiences that I had in the past. I think that's reflective of, you know, perhaps broader personal life and experiences, but within a professional setting, the same thing applies. So I would say kind of really, I had snippets of entrepreneurship everywhere I worked until I went off and started Northbrook Financial. When I first started at Ernst & Young, what I found was, so this is big, big global corporate organization where it's felt very non-entrepreneurial. At least that's what I perceived when I first joined. I saw it was like, okay, I'm just going to fit into a box and there's these tasks that I'm a new staff. I get the coffee, I make the copies, and I try to make spreadsheets work. But what I did find was that kind of the having mentors and identifying humans within this big corporate organization that were kind of growing their own careers. And in a place like Ernst & Young, what drives the value is client service, being able to bring in clients that pay fees to receive the professional services that Ernst & Young provide, kind of attaching myself and kind of working with those individuals who are very, very focused on realizing that that's where like their value is going to come from. That kind of opened up and created some sparks of entrepreneurship where really what I realized was like, if I can come up with something, you know, cool or unique that my manager can then go pitch, that's creating value where value didn't exist before. And maybe we get a new client from it. So the organization will value that. I think a little bit more that really came more and more when I switched over to working at Brown Advisory. That was the second corporate position I had when I went in-house and I was running corporate tax over at Brown Advisory. So that firm, really, I really have to give a tremendous amount of credit to the tone that was set by the leadership in my department, the people who I directly reported to, and then the people who I indirectly reported to. For frankly, I mean, the firm is not shy about this. They kind of pitch this, I think, kind of like as the way they do business, but they are very entrepreneurial minded. And when I first landed at Brown Advisory, I got smacked in the face with that very, very quickly. I was very quickly thrown into situations where I was presented with a challenge or question that was frankly, in my mind, way beyond my pay grade or what I thought I had signed up for. But I realized pretty quickly that having supportive managers who were not trying to push you down with seemingly hard and impossible tasks, they were really trying to use those tasks as ways to bring you up, because the more you push yourself out of your comfort zone, well, then your comfort zone has then been widened. So I came into Brown Advisory with a comfort zone like this, and I was able to leave Brown Advisory with a comfort zone like that. Having a much wider comfort zone really enabled me to kind of push forward and really embrace entrepreneurship on my own when I went off and started Northbrook Financial. I'll give maybe a practical example of how this worked at Brown Advisory is when I showed up there, there was a corporate structure. So I was involved with and ended up leading a very significant, complex corporate restructuring. This was, as I said before, being thrown things way above my pay grade is a great example of this. This was a very, very big project. It fit the definition of entrepreneurship very, very nicely because there was an existing structure that was in place. It was up to the tax nerd in-house, yours truly, to be able to try to come up with a more efficient structure that would save the firm money, like objectively through, you know, within the tax code, and then to actually make that happen, right? So there was an inefficiency within the structure before. I was able to work and identify a structure that would create more efficiency and then actually execute and get it done. So that was a very long, complicated journey, and it opened up my eyes to a lot of areas of the business that I was not familiar with, at everything from trading to client service, marketing, HR. I got involved with all these things because I was leading this massive organizational restructuring at the firm at that time. That was a huge, I'm not going to lie, it was intense. It was a lot of work. But going back to what I said before, I reported to a manager, and I still to this day, I'm in close contact with her. And I remind her that she's my mentor, even though I no longer work there. She's still my mentor, whether she likes it or not, because she really empowered me and pushed me beyond what I thought my limit was. But then again, she enabled me to now have a comfort zone that's much bigger than anything that I thought I would have had before. So I think my experience is kind of leading that restructuring effort at Brown Advisory. For me, I'm very proud of that, which I think is a theme of successful intra and entrepreneurship, because it's hard work. It's something you can't just kind of punch in and punch out and do what they did last year. By definition, you're doing something new. And so you have to have pride in that. And so kind of, you know, being in that place where it was really intense, but then being able to look back and being very proud of that was very rewarding with me. And again, frankly, it gave me that big comfort zone, able to go off on my own and create even more value. Kind of like to use a finance term, I believe that it's kind of like compounding growth. When you first get started on this entrepreneurial path, when you bring your first value add, so maybe it was just like tweaking a spreadsheet for a manager at Ernst & Young when I first graduated college, all the way to, you know, leading a corporate restructuring and then going off at Northbrook and really expanding our business and growing that, all that stuff compounded on each other. It's not just experience, close it, open up the next experience. It's truly like a building block process.
That's interesting. Did you approach that entire journey intentionally trying to do that? Or is that really only something you've been able to kind of codify, you know, reflecting back?
I think mostly on reflecting back. I was just young, and this was me kind of going off into the working world. And, you know, every new experience that I had, it might have not been new for my manager or other people who were already on the team, but like my first tax season go around, I mean, that was a new experience for me. So I do think that I'm able to speak about it more, you know, in a reflective manner, because in the moment I didn't realize it. But one thing, and I think this really could be very helpful for someone interested in kind of, you know, embracing the entrepreneurship kind of ideal within their own careers, is like finding people within your organization that A, there's trust, and that B, they're going to push you out of that comfort zone. Because again, you might not realize it in the moment, and you probably won't, because you're going to be like, oh, this sucks. I'm going to have to work late, or I have no clue what I'm supposed to be doing now. But when you achieve that, that is something that's not just a feather in your hat that you can look back and be like, oh, remember that? That was crazy. You now have something that no one can take away from you. You now have knowledge, experience, and really, it's not just like a technical thing. It's also like an emotional IQ thing. You've gone through, you know, you typically go through and build and cultivate relationships that are only going to benefit you in the future. So someone's within an organization and they're trying to think, you know what, I'm seeing this process and it doesn't make any sense. And I know I could do it better, right? And so I think sometimes some people will kind of, you know, it's easy to kind of stew in that anger or just cynicism about like the current situation. The successful entrepreneur is able to tap into their kind of emotional IQ to be able to thoughtfully reach out to the stakeholders. Because oftentimes the people who are in charge of the current process are the people that you need to go to kind of pitch them on like why that's not good and what we need to do to change it. So building those relationships and proving that you are a reliable person are great kind of great tools and skills to develop, because then when it does come time for a change, you'll be the person to help get it done. And it doesn't always happen when you think it's going to happen. You might go through something and be like, you know what, we need to get a new software because I just went through that and it didn't make any sense. And you might be really stressed out and upset about it. You go talk to your manager and like, we need to do something different. And it gets lost. It wasn't meant to be at that time. But the more, you know, as long as you're maintaining close connections with the stakeholders who are going to kind of help drive the decisions and can help you, like as an entrepreneur, you have just strengthened your ability to actually effectuate change maybe next time. And that's something that I found also is that you kind of seeking, this is maybe like a theme, I talk about this in my personal finance practice all the time, about like kind of expecting the trade-off of like short-term, like delayed gratification, right? So like realizing that like the effort that you put in right now, so in your investments, you save in your 401k, that's not fun. You want to go on vacation, but oh no, Elliot said I got to save in my 401k. Well, that's delayed gratification because it's setting you up for a strong financial future. When you're in the workspace, and I speak for myself for sure as a young, ambitious CPA at a big four firm, I'm like, I'm going to kill it. I'm going to be the man here, right? Realizing that like things aren't going to happen in a linear form in the way that you expect them to. I think it's a good lesson for life and certainly a good lesson for work as well. But the stronger you keep those bonds and kind of cling to the stakeholders that will encourage you, push you out of your comfort zone, when the moment's ready, you'll be ready to go.
I love that. You know, you've mentioned this a few different times in this conversation in a few different ways. You said about the tone at Brown Advisory or the mentor you had at Ernst & Young, you know, and you're talking about stakeholders right here, right? Like, tell me a little bit more about, you know, the environment and the people that enabled this. Like, certainly, I guess what I'm gathering is like, you can't be an entrepreneur alone, right? You're in an organization, but you've had sponsors along the way. Like, what is the importance of the other people involved in trying to drive some of these, you know, efforts forward?
Yeah, I found in my experience, it is critically important to realize that you can't go it alone, even an entrepreneur. And I went, when I started Northbrook Financial, I did not have partners or employees at the time. I did go it alone, but I really didn't go it alone. It is critically important to make sure that if you're going to try to create something that didn't exist before, it's not going to happen through solely your efforts. You might be the one who creates it. You might be the one who implements it. You might feel like you're the one who's doing all the work, but that's not going to be the case. What I think is really, really important and what worked for me, I really saw this in my experiences at Brown Advisory, not to knock my experiences at Ernst & Young, but frankly, I was a little bit more further along in my career at Brown Advisory and just the environment of the firm and the position that I found myself in really lent itself to a lot of entrepreneurial type of opportunities. So what I found to be very, very helpful when I was reporting to my manager was, you know, kind of, and this happens typically in every big organization, you sit down and say, okay, what are your goals for this year? What are you going to do? I'm going to drive efficiency and I'm going to like help boost the bottom line. And these kind of like generic, you know, they're good things and they need to happen. What I found was this was, and I remember with my direct manager, she said, that's great, Elliot. What are you going to do? Like, put it on this paper. So like, tell me, like, what exactly is it going to be? Be very, very deliberate on what you think you can do. So that way next year, when we're discussing, you can explain, well, you know, you were going to drive efficiency. Well, you were going to drive efficiency how? So I have to come up with a very, very specific task. I realize in my case, this had something to do with the way we were doing tax reporting to shareholders. So I said, you know what? I'm going to work on tax reporting to shareholders. And at the end of the year, I'm going to explain to you what I did and how it saved the firm money. I find that having like actionable, deliberate discussions with your manager is very important. Now, those discussions, I think from both parties, in order for them to be successful, this goes back to, I think, what I was saying before about like just getting people that you trust. There has to be trust on both sides. Because if you're going to say things that might ruffle feathers, maybe, and sometimes in an entrepreneurial environment, that's really, you know, whether warranted or not, you might be ruffling feathers. People don't want change. They don't want things to be different from the way that they were. So having trust from both parties, both your manager and from the employee who's reporting to that manager, it's critically important to have trust. So I think in environments, they need to you need to be actionable and deliberate in kind of the goals that you're setting for yourself. And then make sure that it's not just, oh, this is a great meeting. Let's meet again in 6 months. No, you have to follow up. Like, you actually have to make sure that there's a meeting on that calendar. And if it's not booked, like, you make sure that it gets booked. You know, that's being entrepreneurial as well, is like grabbing a situation by the reins and being like, okay, well, I'm going to make this happen. And if it is a follow-up meeting to explain what your accomplishments were, make sure that you do that. So the interpersonal relationships within an organization are critical to being a successful intrapreneur, for sure. That's kind of like at the micro level. I feel at more of a macro level, an organizational level, it is really important that there's a tone at the top that establishes a precedent that, like, we do encourage, you know, disruptive. Disruptive is not a negative word, a disruptive tone within this organization, and that people feel comfortable that, hey, I'm not at risk of losing my job, or that person's not going to take my job. This kind of like zero sum game needs to be discouraged. It should really be like I say this at Northbrook all the time, a 1+1=3 situation, because everything that we do here, we're only better because kind of like we're working together, we're coming up with new ideas that took us from being a 2 company to being a 3 company. That, like, I think can only be done through effective senior level communication. From a more practical level, and I saw this, you know, working both at Ernst & Young with the clients that we worked with, also, as well as in-house at Brown Advisory, is like, put your money where your mouth is, right? And kind of encourage through the way in which you compensate employees, pay them fair. And if you want to encourage people to add value where value didn't exist before, you know where that value financially ends up? It ends up in the share price. It ends up in the equity value, the enterprise value of the firm. So make sure that people know that they have a piece of that pie. So I think you see this, I think this is very common, maybe in the startup world and the tech world. You're starting to, I'm seeing it more and more at Northbrook Financial. The clients that I'm getting, that I'm starting to work with, more and more of them are coming to me with equity comp as a part of their compensation package. And I think that is at a more macro level. Those are the two things: the tone set by management, and then the put your money where your mouth is by, like, hey, giving some equity to these entrepreneurs that can kind of foster a good environment for that. Again, at the micro level, it's more about, I think it's the person realizing that, like, hey, I might be within an organization, but like, and there might be an org chart with lines pointing this way and that, but like, these are human beings. These are not boxes with names in them. So building relationships, cultivating that communication, and realizing, like, again, it doesn't get taught in college, and maybe it's hard to teach in college, but the emotional IQ component, I think, is really, really important to kind of having that successful path.
This is so rich. There's so much there. We could talk for hours, I'm sure, about this. But if I'm hearing you correctly, you know, what I'm taking away is that, right, the environmental factors, I guess, that enable entrepreneurship to thrive, really, it's multifactorial, right? You've got a people component about, you know, your direct manager giving you the space, right? It's you naming exactly what you want to accomplish, and only through maybe naming it can the other people that are needed can support you, because they need to know what direction you're going, right? And then I'm also hearing from you, you know, kind of aligning incentives, right? And at the end of the day, we know what drives human behavior, for better or worse, oftentimes is like, what's in it for me? And here you're aligning the organizational goals with, you know, the desire to innovate with their own personal, you know, motives, I guess, in a lot of ways. There's so much there. It's great.
I want to make sure you know about the other podcast from the Agile brand, the award-winning show about marketing strategy, technology, and the customer experience, and building the brand of the future. It's called The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, and in it, we talk with leaders at some of the world's top brands, the MarTech platforms that are leading the way, and other thought leaders in marketing, CX, and digital transformation. Now in its 5th year with over 400 episodes and 1 million downloads, make sure you check it out with new episodes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. To listen to the Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can go to theagilebrand.show. That's theagilebrand.show. Now let's get back to the show.
So I guess my next question to you would be, what have you carried forward now that you're an entrepreneur? Now that you've started Northbrook Financial, like, how are you trying to pay that forward? Or what type of culture are you trying to cultivate now in your own company?
It's a really, really good question, because I'm talking a lot about my experiences and what it takes in order to get this done. Well, I've, now that Northbrook Financial has been up and running for a few years now, what am I actually doing to kind of effectuate and pay it forward, this idea? Because I do think it's tremendously, I think it's good for the economy. I think it's good for the United States of America economy that we foster entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship. We have to have people being motivated to join organizations, large and small, trying to drive value, right? Because that is what's going to grow the economy, and that's good for everybody. So what am I doing? What have I done, and what am I trying to do? So early on, I had mentioned this 1+1=3 component. We continue to state that regularly at team meetings. So a couple things that we do is, really, when we are meeting as a team, what's unique about Northbrook is that we do provide multiple services. So we have tax services, we have financial planning services, and investment management. And clients, the way our business model is, it's as integrated or as unintegrated as makes sense. So some clients are just tax, some are just investments, some are all three of them. But we maintain a team meeting culture every single week. So it doesn't matter if you're our tax director only working on taxes, our director of investments only doing investments. Everyone gets together for our weekly team meeting. And that's where we get together. A, we try to knock out some practical administrative stuff, meetings, who needs to talk to who, but it's where we kind of remind everyone that, hey, you might not be working with so-and-so for months at a time because it's tax season and they're off doing one thing, or there might not be a lot of day-to-day interaction, but remember, we are all here to make 1+1=3 at Northbrook Financial. So that is something that I got that concept from Brown Advisory, where they implement what they call the morning meeting. I believe I've read about this in annual reports even since I've left the firm, but I took that, and granted, it's not every morning and it's not a catered breakfast either, but we'll get there one day. We have a weekly team meeting, and that's how we start off our week. And we don't do it first thing Monday morning, because no one wants to do a big old meeting first thing Monday morning. But late in the morning on Monday, after everyone's had a chance to settle in, we get together and we make sure that everyone is there. Everyone has their time in that meeting to share and present to the other team members. So we have a tax services time, financial planning services time, and investment management time for people to present. And frankly, it's been good for business, because we found opportunities where a client had an issue on the investment side and the tax director was saying, oh, well, maybe we could do X, Y, and Z. It creates a great opportunity and we're able to better serve the client. So that's one thing, is, again, maybe more at speaking to like the macro level things that I was saying about the tone from management. So that's like a tone that I'm very much trying to set. The second thing I'll say for more of that macro level is the incentive structure. So we certainly, it is very, very clear and transparent. Maybe as we grow, I would envision this being a challenge for us, candidly, as we grow. But for right now, it's pretty clear how much money we're making, where it's coming from, through which business line it's coming from. And that information is open. Everyone knows. And so what that does encourage is that we want to be, what can be a challenge for us, especially for me in my role, is being both a financial planner, as well as a tax provider, as well as an investment manager. So kind of seeing myself getting pulled in all these different directions, if we did not foster this all for one, one for all, 1+1=3, is that everyone's in their own silos. And they say, well, Elliot's not spending enough time in tax. He doesn't care about the tax business. Elliot's not in investments enough. He doesn't care about the investment business. So kind of having this very clear and open understanding of our business model and how we best make money and what drives revenue has been very, very helpful. And it does go into, it frankly does go into discussions around comp every single year for sure. So there's an incentive for people to help support the business across all three business lines. Importantly, we also look at the bottom line because, and this is something I do give a lot of credit to Brown Advisory for. And I've heard, I haven't worked in other organizations, but I've heard that sometimes kind of the people who are revenue generators for organizations, sometimes it might be easier for them to ask for a raise, or they tend to get bigger bonuses because it's easier to maybe quantify or see the value that they're bringing. Well, I brought in $10 million of sales, so I need to get a percentage of that. But what about the back office folks who aren't necessarily bringing in revenue, but are certainly creating value? Because if they can cut expenses, value has still gone up for the organization. So when we're looking at those performance metrics, we are also looking at the efficiencies that can be brought to the table. And I think that's really, really, really important because it could be very disheartening going into an organization and thinking, the sales team, they get all the, like everyone supports sales. It's all about sales. It's a really, really important part of running a business. But anyone who's taken basic accounting, basic finance, or work for a company knows that a P&L, it's called a P&L for a reason. It's got the profit, right? It's got the income. It's got the expenses. That's what determines whether you have a profit or a loss. So those are your levers right there, right? And the expense part, especially for bigger organizations, you can have a material impact in bringing value by kind of addressing that. So that's something that we kind of look at. Then from like kind of more of a micro, because for me, because I had such positive experiences with my managers, I try incredibly hard to try, and I frankly have partners at my firm and we talk to each other and we have to have honest, candid feedback about it. I try very hard to encourage the people who are working for us to make sure to feel that, you know, and honestly, I said the word for us, it should be with us. And like to kind of encourage them to say like, you're joining us. And yes, it's true. I've got some title and I've founded the firm and clients, you know, they want to talk to Elliot and you know, it might seem that there's this like big difference or distance between like you and me, but really I could not do what I do without what you are doing in this organization. That's why you were brought here. You are like a valuable person who works with us in order to bring that value. And so when we're framing discussions with new employees that are joining the organization, I do point back to the actionable and defined goal setting that my manager imparted at me at Brown Advisory. And it's worked out really, really well because people can, and you know, you kind of start off, this is kind of like a psychology thing. It's been behavioral finance as well, kind of like short-term rewards. That's what people need in order to really reach those long-term goals, those long-term rewards, right? Because, you know, like a classic example in finance is like saving for retirement. Like, and that might be for a young person 30, 40 years away. It's abstract. It's hard to relate to. It's like, really 10% has to go to 401k. Like, I'm not going to touch this for a long time. But what you do is if you kind of are trying to condition and coach a savings first mentality for clients, you also say, hey, you meet your savings goal for the next 3 months, you're going out to dinner or you're grabbing drinks with friends, you're going to that concert. So kind of creating kind of treat yourself moments in finance, it's kind of a well-known strategy that a lot of financial planners do. You do the same thing to kind of foster that entrepreneurship, get the little wins. And, you know, the little, small, more frequent wins, again, because entrepreneurship is not it's a compounding equation. The wins and experiences, that comfort zone, it only builds on itself. So when you can start that with little wins, you can kind of encourage that going forward. And frankly, I haven't been in business that long and we are growing and it's great for me just to like, honestly speak with my partners and be like, hey, is this working? Is this not working? But at least that's what I'm trying to do. A lot of it is like really, you know, to pay it forward is indicative that like I receive something from someone else that I'm trying to impart on another party. And I do feel like a responsibility. If I'm gonna practice what I preach, if I'm gonna put my money where my mouth is, I have to actually live these values at work. So that's kind of what we're doing here at Northbrook.
That is great. So I want to try something that I haven't done before, but with the new podcast series, I want to give this a shot because there's so much that rich information that you've shared today. I want to maybe do a quick lightning round and five quick questions, and maybe just give me your gut reaction to each one. So you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do this. So question number one, do all financial advisors or consultants, right, inherently have entrepreneurship tendencies?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. The successful ones.
Yeah. So entrepreneurs, obviously, you know, there's always the press out there that, you know, they've sold their company or they had a successful exit and they've become millionaires or, you know, maybe more. Is entrepreneurship a valid way to build wealth?
It is. I can speak from just being in the business that I'm in. I work with clients that are entrepreneurs and that are entrepreneurs. And I would not discount whatsoever the ability to kind of achieve impressive or you know, high financial goals for someone. I think just like any sort of investment, there's going to be a difference. Like, you know, risk is a double-edged sword. So the upside to downside equation for sure could be balanced a little bit between an entrepreneur and an entrepreneur. One's at the end of the day still has a W-2 and maybe health benefits, and the other person does not. But I feel just in, especially in the past few years, seeing so many of our clients come in and truly being entrepreneurs in their organization and seeing the financial rewards that they're getting, I don't think that an entrepreneur would not be able to, you know, be financially successful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Especially with all the equity stuff that you were talking about, you know, and employee ownership plans. Okay. Question number three, if you had to name two or three of the most important attributes of an entrepreneur, what are those two to three attributes?
Humility, number one. I think the reason why I say that is because I think by its definition, an intro or entrepreneur has to have a little bit of chutzpah, a little bit of kind of, hey, I could do this better, or I'm not going to work for somebody else, which can maybe pull at the important trait of humility, because you're going to fail and you're going to have not everything is going to be a win. The ability to be humble, I think, allows people to both not beat themselves up too badly when they lose, realizing like this too shall pass. But then also on the upside, when things seem to be going so good and you can't make any mistakes, remember, hey, that too shall pass as well. So kind of humility can be a great anchor for anyone who is, you know, interested in intro and entrepreneurship. So that's number one, humility. And I don't have it's going to have to be two words here. I would have to say impatient patience. You have to want to change something. You have to realize that not everything in life is going to go by your clock. Anytime you're trying to change something in entrepreneurship, for sure, there are other people's clocks that you're going to have to work together with. So being impatiently patient is huge. Being impatient, meaning like, hey, I saw something, I want to change it, let's do it. Being patient and realizing that in order for that to get done successfully, you're going to have to work with other people.
I love it. That's great. Okay, two more quick hits. What do you think might be one of the biggest blockers to organizations to drive entrepreneurship or drive an entrepreneurial culture?
Yeah. So I kind of think about it from both kind of like from the standpoint of the entrepreneur, external factors and internal factors. So some of those external factors are going to be, you know, what might kind of be like the usual suspects. Like there is the old ways of doing things. You don't want to step on someone else's toes. Fear is that, you know, you bring something up and then you're going to get dinged at your annual review, and kind of just general corporate red tape, corporate bureaucracy, and, you know, having a great idea and someone saying, oh, that's great, go present it to the IT committee, and then presenting and like never having any real follow-up or feedback, not sure like where you stand, did you piss someone off or not, like how are things going? So those, and I view those as external things because those like kind of like those roadblocks and challenges like are rooted in something outside of yourself, but it's something that you have to interact with. So when it comes to addressing those, this is where I really think that EIQ and entrepreneurship is so important. Emotional IQ. And it's not something, you know, like everything, like regular IQ, you might be born with a certain amount of it, but you can develop and cultivate it. It may be different than the standard IQ. The emotional IQ really, I think, has a tremendous amount of ability for you to develop and build that over time. So you, in kind of fostering, I think I said this probably 20 times already, fostering, cultivating the right relationships is so huge to overcoming those roadblocks. Again, when you are impatiently patient and you work on and you develop that emotional IQ, those roadblocks will become easier to overcome. The other side is the internal roadblocks. Going back to the comment before about kind of having actionable and definable goals, I have found a tremendous amount of success, even though it's 2023, in literally having a piece of paper where I'm writing down what I'm going to do. And then when I do it, I strike a line through it. And I've heard this. I was reading an editorial in the Wall Street Journal a few months ago. They were interviewing all these. It was in the tech world. And they were kind of, the piece was on like, I guess, non-tech kind of things that you, that people might not expect that you do in your career in order to be successful. And multiple responses were all about like, you know what, at the end of the day, I write something down and I say, I'm doing this today. And then kind of checking it off. So the internal roadblocks, I think, come up a lot because in your head, something comes up. And it might be a reaction to a tough situation or something that didn't go well. And so that thought might be kind of rooted in negativity or kind of like a poor experience, something that is making you upset or angry. Write it down like what, okay, so like what's your great idea? How are we going to make that better? And write it down. So separate it a little bit from your head. Write it down. And then you can kind of go back and reflect on it a little bit more thoughtfully and objectively, and then importantly, embrace your emotional IQ, because when you have to go deal with those stakeholders, you can do it a little bit better. I think internally, we sometimes can become our own worst enemy and roadblock to successful entrepreneurship. That is something I can speak from my own experiences, something certainly that came up, and I found a lot of utility and benefit in taking things out of this big old crazy head of mine and putting it down on paper and just pausing for a moment to think about it before I then go and act again. I think those are some big roadblocks that I kind of see. Again, the usual suspects that I look at as kind of external, and you can really work on yourself to kind of, you know, almost like kind of play it like a game. Like, okay, well, I'm going to train up and I'm going to be really good and I'm going to make you my best friend and you're going to approve the software and we're going to save a ton of money and it's going to be great for me and I'm going to get more stock options next year. And then internally, that might even be a little bit harder, but kind of looking at kind of, you know, realizing that some of the things that create those aha moments where it's time to bring value to an organization, it might, there might be a lot of emotion and other feelings that are associated with that in your head. So pull it out of your head then. Separate it from the emotion a little bit so that you can reflect on it thoughtfully.
You've given so much insight and tactics and ways of looking at things. This is, I know I've learned a ton. It's really broadened my perspective. And I guess that's the ultimate goal of this podcast too. So thank you for everything you've shared. I have one final question for you then, given everything we've talked about, right? I'm sure there's folks out there that are, you know, maybe this has sparked some reflection of their own. So if we have leaders out there that are listening to this right now and they're saying, you know, I'm not where I need to be to really foster entrepreneurs or this type of culture, but I want to, how do they get started?
It's a really good question. My advice would be to step back and kind of like look in the mirror and look at where you as an entrepreneur or business leader are and how did you get to where you are, right? So you might be king of the mountain in your company, but no one is born as the king of the mountain, king or queen of the mountain, right? So like step one, go back and think about who were the contacts, the relationships, right? Who did I work with? What did I do in my past that brought me to where I am? And go speak to those people. Go speak to them and reconnect and try to talk through, you know, like realize like it can be a great opportunity to reconnect and express some gratitude to people who really helped you get to where you are. But that can really help you get out of your head a little bit and bring you back down to maybe the bottom or middle of the mountain. Because what you're trying to do here is you're trying to foster and encourage entrepreneurship for people in your organization that are not at the top of the mountain, right? But how do you get them to be as motivated and as excited as you were to get to that top of the mountain? So go talk to the people who helped you get there in the first place. I think that that's a great step. And, you know, where some entrepreneurs are sometimes so forward only looking. And a lot of times, like you kind of get trained on this. It's like you made a mistake, move on. You know, if you let your failures define you, you'll never move forward. And there's something to be said for that, but it could create perhaps a little bit of a challenge if you refuse to ever look at the past, right? So, you know, you don't want to run away from your past. You don't want to wallow in it, but you can certainly learn from it. I believe Rafiki and the Lion King gave Simba quite the lesson on this, right? He told him, you know, you could either run from it or learn from it. And then when he swings the stick again, Simba backs up. And so I think that's a nice little Disney analogy for like what people might want to consider doing. I think that's a great first step. Another thing I would say kind of like, you know, more practically, like within the business. So what do you do right now about it? Start to, depending on the size of your organization, try to implement more actionable and defined meetings with the people who are reporting to you or reporting to your managers, and really, really hold them accountable to it. You know, have a template. When I was at Brown Advisory, there's a template that I'm using right now where there is actually like it's really literally three Roman numerals, where at the top there's the general goals, right? And then the second Roman numeral is the meat of it. Okay, so like you define, so that goal is efficiency. What is your role in driving that efficiency? And then the third Roman numeral is, when are we meeting again? Like, what's the deadline? When are we going to talk about this again? And you're going to kind of pitch to me and tell me, you know, what is it that you did and why it was so great? So I think like kind of actually, again, it requires, you have to do the work. There's no magic wand for this, but any entrepreneur knows that there's no magic wand to success and it takes work. So I think that that's huge. And then a lot of times, the last thing I'll say on this that I think would be very helpful, because I've seen this and this was an experience of my own. In my head, Northbrook Financial is a certain way and a certain philosophy, and everyone should understand that that's the way that we are. So this 1+1=3. This has been in my head forever. What I failed to do was verbalize kind of the way that I envision the greatness of what our company can be, of being greater than the sum of our parts, bigger than ourselves. In my head, I'm like, well, everyone should be thinking that. You join Northbrook. Like, this is what we are. Don't you know that? I mean, aren't you in my head all the time? No, people aren't in your head. So you verbalize that. You let people have an understanding of where you are at, what you value within an organization. It will empower them to A, know where you're at, but B, I think it creates a level of trust and frankly, vulnerability from the leader who's not just siloed off in some office somewhere who's like, I can't talk to you. No, like you open up and you say like, this is the company that we're building right here. And when you have that, I think that will encourage people to, you know, either buy in and embrace that entrepreneurship that you're trying to foster in your organization, or maybe not. And then maybe they're not supposed to be, you know, maybe they're not a good fit for your organization anyway. Not everyone is going to, you know, not every person is the perfect fit for every single job. Things like that happen. But I think that kind of just like verbalizing what you as a leader are expecting and believe in, and sharing that with people will encourage other people to kind of see like, wow, you really like kind of opened up and you explain like where you're at and what you're thinking. And, you know, I'm in, I want to help you.
Well, Elliot, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. You've provided so much insight. I'm certainly going to take a second, you know, listen through this and probably pick up on a few more nuggets that I didn't hear, you know, sitting live with you. But, you know, if anyone's interested in learning a little bit more about Northbrook Financial and anything that Elliot is doing, you know, refer to the show notes. And Elliot, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to the Innovation Economy Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe on your podcast channel of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes at www.innovationeconomy.show or on your podcast platform of choice. The Innovation Economy Podcast was created by The Agile Brand. Be sure to check out the Agile Brand Guide series of books, The Agile Brand Podcast, and other resources for marketing, CX, and other enterprise leaders to manage change and transformation in their organizations. The Innovation Economy is proudly produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, let's keep innovating.